Mini episode 112 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, folks, it's mini episode 112 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross here with you, kind of an addendum, if you will, to the Kyle Ross nine-part History of WrestleMania series. Kyle, we previewed WrestleMania 28 at the end of it, and we are here today to recap what we saw and measure it against what we thought was going to happen.
Yes, a very Ken Burns-esque, I think, nine-part series that we did on the History of WrestleMania. I really enjoyed doing it.
Yes.
First of all, yeah, and I hope that a lot of people enjoyed listening to it.
I think they have.
How ironic, though. I wish that I had the liberal outlet. Like, you know, it's funny that I'm going with the conservative outlet run by you as opposed to the liberal outlet of PBS, I'd like to say. And also on one note before we get started.
Okay.
A couple notes I want to make clear here.
Yes.
While we're live on the air, a little housekeeping, a little dirty laundry I'm going to promote on air. First of all, I would like to apologize to you. For yesterday, there was a bit of a mishap yesterday I was a little confused on the day we were going to do this. I'd like to apologize. You know, I feel so bad that I think I'm going to actually do a sympathy blade job for you while we're doing the podcast.
No problem.
Okay, I'll be the first person to bleed while doing a podcast. That's how sorry I feel. And two, I can only hope that this mini episode is as good as the untaped mini episodes that you and I have done over the last 2 hours here at my condo about ESPN and politics.
Yes.
That unfortunately no one except us two will ever hear.
We've had some good ones here. Since you mentioned blading, I'll start us off on a good note here with this. I've never told anybody this story before. I think I told it to like one or two people who just looked at me quizzically, but I had a weird dream several years back and it involved blading. There was a couple of friends that I went with to the first of the Brian Pillman Memorial shows in 1998. Went down to wherever that gymnasium was in Cincinnati to see that.
I went to the second. Funny story, me and Chad Repeck missed that one.
Okay.
I'm not even going to get into why.
The Bob Sacamano of
yes,
this show.
Yes,
okay.
I worked him in. There we go.
Yes,
I didn't even mean to there.
Nice. Well, so of these, and I had a dream about this at some point after the show. And it was like the weirdest thing ever. I can't even tell you how weird this was. One of the guys in the group that was there, I think it was the guy that drove, Ted, not exactly the Bob Sacramento of this show. But anyways, you remember how at those things they also had like an auction of certain items?
Yes.
All right. I don't know why. I don't know what I had to eat before I went to bed that night. I had a weird dream that this guy, Ted, put in the winning bid on like an actual Brian Pillman blade, and that when he got the thing, he went up there and did a celebratory blade job in front of the crowd.
That's like, crazy.
Where did that dream come from?
I don't know. When you, it's always funny about blade. When you tell people, like non wrestling fans, about blade, they're like, no, you're lying.
My best friend Jeff Maslanich, who has mostly been a behind the scenes contributor to the show, really looking forward to working him in more on air as we go along. He's one of these people that he just obsesses about fake. He's one of those guys. He does not believe that there's any legitimate juice in this. He was trying to convince me on one of these Japanese wrestling death tapes that the thumbtacks were just sparkles.
Oh, dear God.
He's that guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
God, you know, I mean, God bless. I mean, it does seem quite inhumane, some of the things in the greatest sport of them all, but, you know,
it is. People confuse the outcomes with it. But,
let me go get the blade in the kitchen right now, okay, and make good on my promise. So.
Well, speaking of regrettable outcomes, I guess that's where we start this show if we're going in chronological order.
Are we going to do that? Or how are we going to do it this way?
Why don't we just blow through chronologically?
Okay, do we want to hit any macro ideas? Do we want any large, you know, big world concepts here?
Okay.
Let me hit one.
All right.
WrestleMania, by the way, we're covering WrestleMania 20. 28 here.
Yes.
Post-game wrap-up. A few weeks later, I was out of town. Had a wonderful time in Chicago. Thank you very much. But when I think back to WrestleMania 28, my initial thought when I watched the show, and I texted you this, I think, and followed up with an email that was even more descriptive, and it definitely holds true right now.
Yep.
I have never seen not only a WrestleMania, but a major show, or really any show, in the history of this industry I should take that back. That's a broad, bold statement. I could probably find a better example. But certainly one doesn't come to mind quite like this, where it was so explicitly clear from the promotion what mattered and what didn't.
Right.
And when you talk about the latter, what didn't, my God, was the first hour of this show so non... It did not have a WrestleMania feel to it. I'm going through, I'm like, no, it was what, an eight-match card? Overall,
yeah.
Eight-match card. And they just blew through these first four matches as if to say, you didn't buy the show because of these four matches, and by God, we know it, and we're going to treat it as such.
As if it was a house show at the Manhattan Center, essentially.
I mean, even when you go back to, and we talked about these older WrestleManias, they at least tried to make even the pointless seem to have a point.
Right.
You know, they'd air, you know, video packages detailing, you know, what had gone down. And granted, I guess they did that for some of these too, but the speed with which they blew through these compared to the time that the... Now, I'm not saying that top matches don't deserve the extra, because they do.
Right.
Okay, because that's what sold the show. That's what people want to see largely. But it was just so explicit. Like, we'll get in... I mean, we get stuff like Randy Orton, Kane, Cody Rhodes, Big Show. Didn't really care going in, and, you know, what, 2 weeks removed now or whatever we are? I even care less. You know, they were just so pointless that they didn't even try. They're just like, okay, yeah, we put these guys on the show, and they got a WrestleMania paycheck, but... Who cares?
But here's why I expect more, and here's why I'm going to be disappointed in any year when they don't go in explicitly trying to make a WrestleMania 17 where everything on there means something and is very good, basically. Here's why. Because I go back to the old SNS days, and as you know, I like to listen to some of the old shows there. Listen, in 06,
there were a lot of bad shows.
Boatload. Yeah, you know what one of the main reasons is? They had a boatload of guys... And a lot in upper mid-card and top-of-the-card positions who couldn't work, okay? Now, we don't have to get into the reasons why, but post-Guerrero, post-Benoit, wellness era, they've been shamed into it, but whatever. Almost everybody can work now. There's no excuse. They have excellent workers up and down the card.
I might disagree a little with you. I don't think this is the most talented roster they have by any means.
Yeah.
I don't think it's close. Do they have some athletic guys?
It's a hell of a lot better than 5 years ago. It's a hell of a lot better than 8 years ago.
I don't know about that.
It's better than some of the Attitude Era rosters, probably.
It's certainly deeper. That initial run in the... I mean,
right.
That roster was... Did not have a lot of depth to it in, like, 97, 98. The guys on top were very, very
right.
good, and there wasn't a lot under. I mean, those 97 shows, for instance, were well-known for having phenomenal main events involving the Harts, the Austins,
right.
the Michaels, you know, Undertaker to a lesser extent.
Right.
Foley was in the mix, and then, you know, you had, like, Nation of Domination versus DOA on the
right.
undercard, right? The roster, when I look at the undercard of this show.
Right.
And by the undercard, I'm basically excluding three matches. Rock Cena, Triple H Taker, and Punk Jericho.
Yeah.
They're... Yeah, you know, I'm not making excuses and saying what they did was right. There are a few exceptions, and we're going to get to the big one, Daniel Bryan, in a moment, folks, and my thoughts on that.
And it's shameful, by the way, that one is not lumped in with the other three matches you just talked about. It's a world friggin' title match.
Well, you know my opinion on the split world titles. I don't need to beat that drum.
Right.
It's needless. It's stupid. Okay? Moving forward, I really hope they get rid of it. But anyway, it's a different time. Podcast for a different day.
Yep.
I don't see a lot of talent. Like, talent that I really want to see showcased in a major spotlight. Daniel Bryan's the exception. I would love to see Daniel Bryan. Now, Sheamus wasn't the right guy for it anyway.
No.
But
Sheamus has some real good upside.
I guess.
And you can't even compare him to the big men of 06. Sheamus is a very good worker for his size.
Give me a name.
He wasn't on the roster that long, but Daniel Rodimer, that guy.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going back even a little further, then, I'm just going to throw out guys generally from that era because I don't always remember year to year. Nathan Jones.
Okay.
Nathan Jones or Sheamus. What was... I don't know that he was necessarily that big of a guy, but he was a crappy worker. Kenzo Suzuki, was he that big of a guy?
No.
No,
he was not talented.
Okay. But, yeah, he was very untalented. Mordecai or Sheamus. I mean, on and on and on, Kyle Ross. Let's be grateful for what we have. Sheamus is a good working big
there
man.
There are, but just because it's better than crap doesn't necessarily mean it deserves a huge spotlight.
But
it deserves some respect.
But when you look at the guys on this roster and what they can do with them in the years to come, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, if they haven't already killed him to death.
He's
very good.
Really?
The Miz.
Very good?
Jack Swagger is very good.
Really?
Jack Swagger could at least be a poor man's Kurt Angle. Jack Swagger is very good. He's a very good worker.
Do we have video
He's got
this
a good
podcast?
Hateable...
Do we have video on this podcast to show the look I'm giving you right now, brother?
Jack Swagger... But his,
I have
his,
not
his
seen
booking's
it.
Been horrible. The booking's been horrible. He can,
Here's the thing.
He can work well.
Here's the thing. It's on both sides with a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
When you look at the undercard, those guys not involved in those top three matches, has the booking been favorable for a lot of them? No. No, it hasn't. Has it been counterproductive in a lot of instances? Yes. Yes, it has.
Yeah.
I just don't see a ton of talent when I look at the non-spotlighted positions on this roster.
Cody Rhodes? Cody Rhodes is very good.
He's very good. Again.
Very good.
I don't want to make NBA analogies.
Future big star.
Really?
Yeah.
See, when you say future big star, is that because of the times we're in or because he's generally a huge star?
He's not a huge star yet, and he's not perceived as being a huge star yet, but in another year or two, he could be.
Is he like a this is trying to, like, legitimize it and make it like a sports thing. I mean, is Cody Rhodes like a WWE Hall of Famer?
My thing is, he could be in the future.
Are these guys, like, a lot of these guys...
You talk to NBA, he could he's Kyrie Irving, I think. He's going to be one of the very best guys.
He could be. I'm not saying, but, like, right now... He's good. Is he good? Is Cody Rhodes, without me putting too much thought into it, like a top 10 guy in this company? Yeah, he is. But
And another guy, too, and that they have found ways to repurpose guys. God help me, I never thought I'd see a use for this guy, but in the last year, now his push has been start and stop the last couple months, the man who has become Black Vader, Mark Henry.
Yes!
My God, Mark Henry is... Who saw that coming?
Yeah, I know.
Holy crap!
You know, some of these tools on certain message boards that I'm not going to dignify by naming, like, thought he was so good, like, a few years ago. I didn't see that then.
Well, I wouldn't give to have been a fly on the wall when the initial idea first came up for Mark Henry's push. That must have been quite a moment.
Yes, and he has improved. But again, it's not... They're good in the classic wrestling sense, but they're not good in that, like, they're going to attract people who otherwise wouldn't buy the show. They're just kind of there and to be filler. Because the way that, here's the thing, they don't book good mid-card storylines at all anymore. I can't even remember the last good mid-card storyline they had. I mean, I kind of liked... And we disagreed with this, if I remember, about the Chris Jericho thing at WrestleMania 20, which, by the way, would have been 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was Jericho was kind of had already been a made guy. He was a former world champion.
Right.
I can't remember the last great mid-card storyline this company had.
Right.
Something that didn't involve, like, a title program or two made guys, quote-unquote. They don't do that anymore.
Right.
So, if they don't do that, then guys that don't have a great story just don't. I mean, they are basically, you know, filler. I barely know her.
As much as I love doing stuff with you now, doing these podcasts, I sort of miss a little bit the Kyle Ross I used to listen to on SNS in 06 and occasionally interact with on the show. The Rage Against the Dying of the Light Kyle Ross, who was like, damn it, they got to create the stars of tomorrow.
When's
The Undertaker going to job to somebody in a meaningful way? I kind of miss that guy a little bit. You're still entertaining to do stuff with, but I miss that guy a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Like my parents, I have sold out, and I would recommend our listeners to do the same. Here's the thing. There are a hundred of political analogies I can make. I'm not going to go into them now. Is that going to happen? I mean, it's to the point now where they've blown so many of those opportunities. Here's the thing. I thought back in times, and maybe I was desperate and, you know, just very Skip Bayless-esque, desperate for ratings and just saying things to get a rise out of people or cater to the audience. But
you believe that.
No, I did. But here's the thing. I think, you know, when I got, like, look at the guys on the roster now, look at the guys on the roster, and I'm going back years to, like, 2000.
Yeah.
Okay? When you were talking about, you know, the Benoit's, never, I mean, you can't say never mind what he did, but a guy like a Chris Benoit.
That would be very Scott Keith
of you. Yes, yes, yes. A guy like a Chris Benoit, an Eddie Guerrero, a Chris Jericho, a Kurt Angle. When those guys were getting hosed, that was one thing. Because those guys had, I don't see, now it doesn't help them when they do job.
Right.
But, you know, Mark Henry at this point, even if he is doing his role well, his ceiling is not what those aforementioned guys were. Those four guys were and never really. It's funny because they actually all got breaks at the top. Never, I didn't feel true breaks at the top. They were never the man, to quote CM Punk.
Right.
But these guys, some of the guys you've mentioned, like a Cody Rhodes, I'm not seeing right now in Cody Rhodes say what I saw in Kurt Angle. And you put Jack Swagger.
Okay.
If Jack Swagger jobbed to The Undertaker on pay-per-view, I certainly would not be nearly as up in arms about that as I would say if there had been some podcast that never happened after Fully Loaded 2000.
Right.
Okay, where I remember I was just irate with the booking.
Right.
Because I'm like, these guys will make you money.
Yeah.
Okay, now, again, to your point, does it help these mid-card guys, these newer guys, that when they job? No, it doesn't. But at the same time, you know, CM Punk showed last summer that, yeah, you know what, if you can kind of tread water through some crappy and non-preferential booking, if you get the right situation, you can still become a made guy.
Okay.
So when it really gets a problem is when you've got that perfect storm. And I thought they blew a lot of those perfect storm opportunities through the years with the Benoits, the Angles, the Jerichos, the Guerreros. There's no perfect storm. It's not like these guys are on the cusp. It's not like, and that's not to say they can't. I'm not saying they should quit and become, you know, pizza delivery men.
Right.
But I have not seen a lot of these guys. You know, Dolph Ziggler's very good.
Dolph Ziggler is friggin' awesome. Dolph Ziggler.
See, I listen to these people talk about these great matches he has.
They are awesome. They're awesome. This guy.
Define what's awesome.
This guy should. If what's awesome? This guy.
I don't think he
four stars on many occasions. I believe some of the CM Punk matches. Certainly.
Okay, sniffed four stars. To me, that's not awesome. That's doing your job.
Boy, your expectations are kind of lofty. There's not too many guys on this roster that can go out there and expect to sniff four stars fairly regularly.
My point exactly.
Well, but I'm just saying, like, Dolph Ziggler, like, to me, and it, for example, here's a future segment that I want to do with you. I came up with an idea for this. I know you shot down my overall idea of pro wrestling in the Olympics.
Stu Sachs, get the heck out of here.
But if they were to do that and then submit to judging and everything like that, circa K. Allen Fry of 92, if there was a U.S. Olympic team, six guys, Dolph Ziggler's got to be on it.
Yeah,
Dolph Ziggler's one of the six best wrestlers
in
North America. He can go out there. He can work a number of different styles. He's best as a heel, granted. He's best as a heel. He's a phenomenal worker. His moveset is incredible. He's got great charisma to the crowd. I am the biggest Dolph Ziggler fanboy there is. I think he's only behind CM Punk in my estimation as far as pro wrestlers on the scene
today.
Daniel Bryan's got to be right there too. It's the three of them. Yeah, I'll take Punk first, and then probably Bryan, and then Ziggler.
He has potential.
He's awesome.
Look, do some of these guys deserve to be protected better than they are? Yeah, I'll sign that petition, Rick Morris.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's not at the cusp. When I see Dolph Ziggler, do I see potential? But he is not on. Look, here's the problem again. They don't do storylines anymore.
Right.
Okay, it's all about just perception, and it's just about kind of that one event. CM Punk had it. Okay?
They do some bad half-ass storylines.
Yes, CM Punk did it with the one promo, okay?
Yeah.
That's all it really takes, apparently, now. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of big moment.
Right.
Okay? That one shining moment. Or the NCAA tournament just ended that one.
Right.
It's just about getting one shining moment rather than some sort of sustained push that builds to the perfect storm now. So if that's the way it is, then okay, then I'm just going to wait for these guys to have their moment. I'm not going to beat the drum for them every time out.
But here's the thing, and I think you'll agree with me on this. If you look at the booking pattern of the last at least 2 years With the way that they brought in Rock for last year, with the way that they said in a year in advance that Rock was going to be at WrestleMania this year in the main event, they appear now kind of overtly, because this is the way that it's gone. I mean, WrestleMania has been, and I go back as far as WrestleMania 20, I think, popped the needle pretty big. There were a couple different times. I think WrestleMania 20 they were hoping was going to be the beginning of the next boom, and it didn't happen. And they seemed like back then to be trying for that. Would you agree with me now that these days they're setting their sights in terms of like, okay, we're going to do a huge number next year? Like, we realize most people are not going to tune in until then, but we're going to get these people. All the casuals are going to come back next year, like for the Super Bowl.
Oh, yes, that's completely what it is. Right. WrestleMania, and I think we talked about this during the series of podcasts we did this way. WrestleMania no longer, and that's why, you know, some people are like, why are you doing all those last ones in one big podcast?
Yeah.
Because largely, WrestleMania no longer is the final chapter in a year-long story. And there's nothing wrong with what I'm saying. It's just a big event where we're going to put the big stars in a top. We're going to get the biggest stars we can and just put them in top positions.
With few exceptions, it's really the only thing that matters in a year. I mean, outside of CM Punk was an aberration. All they really, like, they've conditioned it now.
Yeah, what happened in the last 12 months that was that great except CM Punk? Like, what mattered?
Nothing. Nothing did. And if you go back to 12 months previous.
Alberto Del Rio? Who cares?
Yeah. And this is how they've conditioned people to think. So here's my criticism, Kyle. And here's why I want to see, as the idealist that I am, the WrestleMania 17 booking on down the card. Here's why, okay? Because, all right, I accept that most of the casuals aren't going to tune in during the course of the year and everything like that. And I talked to you about this off air last year, being disgusted that while, like the good wrestling hipster I am, that while Daniel Bryan and Sheamus last year was shunted to the dark match, they had time for The Rock and these fart sketches backstage, all this kind of stuff. And I looked at all the marks all around me in Harpo's, and they were lapping it up. Okay, all right, so I get that. I get that that's who they're catering to, these people who only watch it once a year. What you want, if you're going to have a solid business model, if you're ever going to have a chance of growing this thing and getting your stock price out of the penny stock range as they are now and all these other things, you got to make it, Kyle, so that next year people tune back in. I remember that guy from last year. Yeah, he was pretty good. Oh, that guy's a champ now? I find that completely plausible. You got to grow, Kyle. You got to grow your own.
You're preaching to the converted.
You people should understand
growing
your own.
You're preaching to the converted.
Yes.
They, though, are very short-sighted.
Yes.
And we'll talk very short-sighted, and we're going to talk about this with the Lesnar stuff after we're done reviewing this particular WrestleMania.
Okay.
But, I mean, to their point, they're right now in Titan Towers, they're very happy with the number this show did. Now, does the question, and I don't know if there's if there is a right or wrong answer at this point right now, it's something that years back we'll have to look at this. Does this one big number, they did a big number, and we're going to talk about that too, folks, because this did monster numbers for them. Does doing this one huge number at the marquee show of the year justify the rather pointlessness of the other 11 months? Or, you know, you could say WrestleMania, they always say WrestleMania season starts with the Royal Rumble.
Right.
But that show did a pretty disappointing number.
Right.
Does doing this one huge number justify the disappointing numbers and general pointlessness of the other 11 months of the year? Because to your point, and I think what you're getting at is you're like, hey, you can do a big number at WrestleMania, and you can also do big numbers the rest of the year, too. You don't need to just treat the rest of the year as filler,
right,
I barely know her, and then just care about WrestleMania.
You got to get people to bond with the current stars and not just the special attractions that are there for WrestleMania.
Yes, if you look at the 98s, the 99s, the 2000s, the 01s, the 02s, going back to that period.
The crew was over.
The crew was over, and during the course of a year, your Summer Slams would do some big numbers. The Royal Rumbles certainly did big numbers. Survivor Series is largely, it's never really been that big of a thing. It's only big because it was the second pay-per-view they ever did.
Right.
But as a concept, that's really no longer over at all. But, yes, you had ran, you know, No Way Out 01 did a big number.
Right.
Invasion 01, you know, obviously that had the hugest storyline ever, which should have been, whatever. That's
in a few weeks, Extreme Rules will, but that's the steroid effect of when you bring up Brock Lesnar. I'm not saying he's on steroids.
Yes,
draw your own conclusions. But it's an artificial injection of a major element.
But what's funny is when you look at things, and maybe they're right, maybe right now wrestling's just at a period where people with their attention spans and stuff, people just want to know something's a big deal, and you can't make you realistically cannot have 12 big pay-per-views here. You can try.
Right.
But you're just not unless if you're red hot, you have a ton of talent and you're doing everything right, it's very rare that you're going to have, you know, even 5-6 straight pay-per-views that really seem like a big deal. In 2000, which was, by the way, their biggest business period ever, they did do that.
Right.
But that's rare. Okay, there's a reason it's the biggest business period ever, because it doesn't happen often. I mean, they do things. They try to make the Survivor Series special by bringing The Rock back this past November.
Right.
Didn't do diddly-poo on pay-per-view.
Well, here's the thing.
And he did a lot more than diddly-poo here on April 1st.
The proof in the pudding for what I'm saying for why they should do it this way was referenced by you when we were talking about WrestleMania 17. Here's the proof of what I'm saying.
What did I say? I forget what I said.
This is what you said. This is what you said. That you pointed out, and this was a very good point on your part. We were talking about the Battle Royal that they did on a show. And you said that was the first time, and ironically this was right at the end of the Attitude Era, but it was the first time in the entire Attitude Era they engaged in nostalgia. The entire Attitude Era was built around guys who were nobodies as far as being big stars before the Attitude Era started. So for right now,
what's funny too, now that I think about that, a lot of that coincides with the death of WCW, because so much of the WWF's success during the Attitude Era was we're new, we're hip, because that's what they had to do. Because when they started on that plane, WCW had all the big name stars, and they had to basically say, you know what, these guys are old. We used to have them when they were all in their prime. Yep. We're going to create a bunch of new guys.
And Mania 17 happened mere days after WCW
folded,
and it was the beginning of the, and I'm saying this in an image sense, it was the image of we own everything now. We are the custodians of pro wrestling.
And here's
now.
The thing. From their perspective, it didn't make sense when so much of their history was working for the competition at the time.
Right.
To reference that history.
Right.
So it behooved them to shat on their history, so to speak. Now it doesn't be, and they shouldn't shat on their history right now. You know, I think right now they're in a position where they're the only game in town. I've always said what would behoove them the best was to inject the two boom periods, 80s style booking where it's based in the long term. You've got long, you know, it doesn't all have to be Hogan Savage. That's once in a generation type stuff. But, you know, where you can let stuff breathe. You don't have, it's not the Monday Night Wars where you've got to just be so awesome this second.
Right.
Mixed with the 90s attitude. Where, you know, because a lot of the stuff when you watch the 80s, okay, it's fun, it's nostalgic, but it's like, dear God, with this. Like, Ricky Steamboat learning to regain his voice in those vignettes would not get, okay, the man would be booed out of the building if he did.
And I'll tell you what, we're really stretching this whole macro thing before we go to the micro, but let me make one more point on this here.
We only have three matches to talk about on the show.
Something that is a potentially very healthy development once the WWE Network starts up here. This talk, and now that it's been shelved for later in the year, if you remember, I mean, what were they smoking at the time? It was supposed to have been on the air at the time of WrestleMania 28. Good thing they didn't try to do that. That seemed like a dumb idea.
I think that was one of those things that Vince McMahon, I think, wanted to challenge himself.
Right.
And probably all of his people were like, oh, my God, like, okay, we'll try. And then, a week later, Vince is like, what was I thinking?
Right. And that's why it took him a while to come around to that. All right, it's supposed to start now, I guess, in November or the fall or whenever. But here's the thing, though.
If it started by next year's WrestleMania, I'll be impressed.
So I don't know. All right, well, we're talking long-term booking and what can be done to make WrestleMania better and everything like that.
By the way, this show did very well. We're going to talk about that.
But critically, it could have been a hell of a lot more than it was, and I think that's something you and I are both going to be talking about here. At least I am. I know you agree that it could have been better than it was. I thought you did. Anyways,
it
I
was
speak for
a
you.
Fringe. I believe I. If do you have
you
your
said fringe top ten in
fringe
your email
top
to
10.
Me.
It was towards the bottom of.
But that's because at least 14 or 15 WrestleManias were pure dog crap. I mean,
that's a harsh comment.
Well,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about that. I only think there have been a couple, you know, dog crap WrestleManias. I mean,
okay.
There have been some that are average or subpar, but I mean, to call like four, half of them dog crap, I think, is certainly stretching.
Our old associate, Paul Belfi, who immediately afterwards I saw on Facebook, called us a top five one.
That's preposterous. That is preposterous.
Yeah, I do not agree with that.
Here are the WrestleManias I can definitively say are better. 3-17. All right, let's break it. Remember how
I'm looking at your list right here. We'll see how many you're going to get right.
Okay, that's right. Okay, I put that at the bottom of the thing.
Yes.
3-17, as I said, are a standalone top tier.
Yeah.
The next group is 10, 14, and then 19 through 21.
Yes. You said 20, 21, 19 in that order.
Okay. Depending on what day and, you know, what I've smoked recently, those bottom three can always shift around. They're all the same era. 10 and 14, to me, are definitely the third and fourth best.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got those seven, if I'm counting correctly, at
the
top. Okay. This WrestleMania just passed was at the bottom of the next tier. I did not like it as much as the... first of all, let me just say
one
thing.
You put it above eight. The next tier was five deep. You put it above eight.
Okay. Let me make one thing clear.
Yeah.
I definitely liked it a lot better than last year. It was definitely... Okay, I don't think there's anyone who's going to...
Last year sucked a knob. Okay. Last year was horrible.
Again, horrible seems strong. Let's not give in to that hyperbole, Skip Bayless, okay? All right? But that was just good.
Well, just based on what it could have been. Last year had really good...
Everyone's what could have been, you know?
Let's have a CM Punk-Randy Orton match where the entire storyline is built around Randy Orton having a bum leg instead of these two guys going out and tearing the house down.
Okay, but...
Ridiculous.
Could that have helped? Yes, but in the long run, whatever. But anyway, this WrestleMania was definitely better than last year's, but it was not as good as 2 years. 2 years ago, I really liked that one.
26, you had at the top of that tier. You said 26, 24, 23, 28, and 8 as your next tier of five.
I think that's right.
Okay.
I think this WrestleMania was very much along the lines of 23 and 24. 23,
okay.
Which, by the way, this rumored to have beaten that number.
Yeah.
Okay. It relied on some, you know, 23 and 24... Like this WrestleMania, I think they're very comparable for a number of reasons, just in quality, and they kind of relied on kind of some, you know, some tricks, some old, you know, wrestling tricks about, you know, 23 obviously drew a huge number based on, whether you want to admit it or not, Vince and Donald Trump putting their hair up. Okay,
horrible storyline.
Yeah, but it drew a big number. Okay, I mean, you know, 1.2 million wrestling fans probably can't be wrong. You might think so, but I don't know if they can be. So you might have think of, now again. It's very perfect, okay? Because it's in that moment, it draws a lot of interest. But given the participants, one is, you know, unfortunately no longer with us, and the other guy is now a fringe MMA fighter.
Yeah.
Okay, it did nothing for the actual participants, that gimmick. But in that moment, in that vacuum, it did well. And 24, what did they do? What was the big selling point there? You know, wrestling fans will say, oh, it was Ric Flair's last match. But realistically, the big selling point was the inclusion of Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Yeah.
on the card.
Yeah, I guess it's Big Show. Yeah.
Again, he came in and he beat their talent.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, for one night, that drummed up a lot of interest. But for the other 11 months, okay, what do you do now?
Right.
And this WrestleMania was very much like that.
Yeah.
It was very good in the moment. Certain parts were... But it probably, and we're going to get into this when we talk about Roxina, certainly, it does not do a lot of justice for the 11 months of the year, which I kind of think brings this thing full circle.
Right. Before we get to the micro, let me finish this last macro point, and that being, I think the WWE Network is going to help greatly in what you're if they follow through on one of the plans they're talking about in terms of long-term booking. And I'll tell you why. Because you didn't agree with me that there would be, or could be, or that it was even possible to do a return to Clash of the Champions. I was telling you on one of the podcasts previously. You said, look, it'll never happen. You can't go back to six or eight. All right, well, here's the thing, Kyle. If they're going to take a lot of the B pay-per-views and put them on WWE Network only, which is what they're talking about doing, you accomplish the same thing. You don't have to push a buy rate. Because there's no buy rate. It's just the people who already are subscribing to your channel. Theoretically, you want to get more people to subscribe to your channel, but that will lead to more long-term booking. Because if you only have to worry about selling WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and maybe two other ones, depending on whatever they might be.
That was the mentality behind the split brand pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Remember that, okay, that the Raw storylines, the SmackDown story, will each get 2 months to breathe.
Right.
And it kind of worked, but unfortunately...
Yeah.
It kind of never materialized, maybe because the problem with the way they split it is there's just not enough talent on each side.
Right.
They don't... They're just not creative enough. You know, John Cena's always got to be in the mix, or this guy's always got to be at the top of the card, rather than say, you know, let's just have, you know, these guys, we have this really hot program. Let's put them on the top. Let's make that the marquee match, even though it's not maybe a title. You know, like, I don't know, I'm just throwing something out. Like, remember when Undertaker Mick Foley buried alive main evented a pay-per-view? It was even named buried. It was like October 96.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, we don't have a strong world title program right now. Let's make this the main attraction. Now, granted, that drew nothing, but so maybe it's a bad example. But to me, that's the way they should do it, where, you know, you can't have John Cena be the most important thing every month.
That's true.
I just don't know if they're going to do that. I don't have the confidence.
Well, we kind of talked already a little bit about Teddy Johnny. I know that we kind of disagree on the importance of that. I didn't talk about it here. I was glad to see. I have a hard time keeping track of what was on air and off air at this point. But anyways, all right. No, it's I agree with your point that we should probably just talk about the top matches and stuff again. Could it have been done better? Of course.
Teddy Johnny.
But, I mean, look, and the face team was incredibly weak. I was just glad to see the heels in the spotlight in a strong it was a storyline that was over. And really, it was over in large part because of John Laurinaitis' real-life D-bag character translating so well to the screen.
He's doing a good job. Say what you will about John Laurinaitis definitely sucking at his job a lot worse than Jim Ross did. But, he's over as an on-screen character right now, and he does a very good job.
David Otunga still has a long way to go in the ring, but as a
character... Oh, he's horrid in the ring.
But as a character...
Did you see him last Monday?
Yeah.
He made it. He might as well have just written on a piece of paper and put it on the camera. This Santino Marella is going to put his leg on the ropes, folks. He screwed that spot up so bad. It was almost embarrassingly bad.
The thing in the long run...
His character's not bad, though.
His character is awesome.
And he has a very nice physique.
You know what? I was just about to say, that physique could be the downfall of him in the long run, and I'll tell you why. Because the fact that he is...
By the way, sorry for ruining your pen cap. I'll give you a new one.
the fact that he is such a good character is a trap. Because what would you say about somebody under normal circumstances? Just make him a mouthpiece. Well, they're not going to take a guy with a physique like that and just make him a mouthpiece. That's the problem. That dude needs to lose like 100 pounds of muscle like tomorrow if he wants to have a long-term career. Because then they can shrink him down, make him a manager type, and keep him over.
Yeah, I don't see him really.
They'll never let him just be a mouthpiece, dude. Never.
No, not with that physique.
No.
And you're right. I don't see him getting to the top of the card based on his in-ring ability or lack thereof.
No,
But here's the thing with this match. I just want to hit this.
Okay.
It was over. Yeah. I think if you look at the matches on this show, that I could certainly argue that this was the fourth most over match.
Okay.
With the Rock, Cena, Triple H, Taker, you know, certainly being well ahead of everything else. Then Punk, Jericho, solid number three.
Yeah.
This was number four. But I think this was a waste of time. I hate the general manager storyline. To me, I don't think the wrestlers, the crew, got any rub out of this whatsoever.
But I wanted to see them get featured.
T-shirt thing was real lame, and I thought basically made them nameless and faceless. And I would rather, because first, I think even, you know, the rubiest of rubes.
Yeah.
Knew which side was going over here.
Yeah.
I would have just preferred them 1 week to, you know, somebody, whatever, some figurehead, it doesn't matter who, come on, say, you know what, Teddy Long, hit the bricks.
How would you have gotten Dolph Ziggler a sweet Mania match? Or Miz? Or Jack Swagger?
Ideally, let's pair Dolph Ziggler up with some decent working baby face and give him some time. But you're right. They're not going to do that.
Or if him and Swagger had the tag pennies. I keep waiting for them to do that. That would be an awesome tag team.
I agree with you on that. But
instead of wasting them on guys who are on the pre-show, that is they've now unified the belts and are still worthless.
Yeah, yeah, that is an issue, but...
But they control it. They don't have to be worthless. The belts
agree,
are worthless because they deem them to be worthless.
Again, none of the guys... This was just like... To me, do you know what this was, this match?
What?
It was like a battle royal, basically. It's like, all right, let's find just some big match that
yeah.
we can get a lot of guys on the card.
Yeah.
And largely... not just largely, none of the performers got a rub out of this match. This match served one purpose.
Might have started to redeem Miz a little bit.
I disagree.
You don't think so?
It did nothing.
Okay.
This match served one purpose and one purpose only, and it's the purpose it should, to make John Laurinaitis the general manager of both shows.
Right.
And to me, they did not need to have a WrestleMania match to do that.
Okay.
That's my thoughts and my thoughts only.
All right. Well, I mean, it is kind of historic to have the same general manager on both shows. They haven't done that before.
I don't think that means anything.
Okay. Well,
I think the general manager.
He's
going to
say the same played out authority figure on both shows, putting down the faces and stupid. It's too formulaic.
John Laurinaitis is a funny character, but
he shouldn't be. He's just straight standard issue heel authority figure.
Yeah, it's just a role.
There's a way.
He's playing
yeah.
a role that's been played before
right.
by a bunch of non-wrestling
right.
heels.
If
and
he was,
he's good at it,
right.
but at the same time, I just think that the whole general manager... I think the split world
right.
championships,
right.
I think the brand split in general is just played out. The idea that these shows need a general manager
right.
is kind of lame. Now, what's he going to do? I mean, you're right. I mean, he's not going to be on TV.
Right.
I guess he could be a man. I mean,
how's he going to have a draft? You wrestle for me on this show. You wrestle for me on this show.
The draft is another thing. It's stupid. Don't do that.
Yeah,
don't even waste my time with that.
That is ridiculous.
That's dumb.
But no, I mean, they just instead of standard issue heel authority figure, just have him be more like what he was in the beginning. You know, corporate D-bag weasel type character.
Exactly. He doesn't have to have I guess the authority does help somewhat, but
right. But unless he is out there, like, they want him every week twirling his figurative cartoon mustache. And that's just too cookie-cutter
yeah,
for him.
Like, and we'll get to this later. I don't like his inclusion in the Lesnar-Cena storyline at all.
That's the desperate attempt to babyface Cena. Desperate.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what that reeks.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, I mean, that just, yeah. So,
yeah.
I was not, whether you talk, there were only... This was a three-match show.
Yeah.
Three matches were very good on this show. The rest was completely pointless. And
yeah.
it doesn't even bear talking about, with the exception of one match, obviously, and it was a match that had the internet up in arms at the time.
Well, let's get that out of the way.
Yeah,
the one that should have been on that level, but it wasn't. And a throwaway, it was the opener. If you blinked, you missed it.
I was in shock when this happened. And I can understand why people were upset, because... There is a portion of the audience that probably did come to see Daniel Bryan wrestle.
And what about all the rubes that were seeing him for the first time and had heard about him? What about that?
I don't think they had heard of him. I think the... Well, what do you mean? Like the people?
Like the world champion.
Okay.
Who's this world champion guy that's wrestling on the show? Daniel? I thought I heard somebody talk about this Daniel Bryan.
I think those people didn't know Daniel Bryan from Daniel Boone.
You don't think the Harpo's crowd really had much familiarity?
I'm talking about the crowd that bought this show because of The Rock and because they were fans of the Attitude Era, and they...
Right.
The people that basically got catered to for the show, the people who basically were like, we want to remember how good wrestling used to be, and we don't really give a damn up. We're not going to watch the other 11 months.
Okay.
So we want that point reiterated. And Daniel Bryan to them, first of all, when I watch wrestling with that crew, and I watched with a couple guys who had not watched the pay-per-view in a while,
right.
a lot of people still get, they're like, wait, why is the World Championship match first? So
yep.
to me, again, look. I can see why people are upset, but I kind of almost want to say, if watching Daniel Bryan wrestle was the main reason you paid all of that money to buy tickets and go to WrestleMania, then I don't want to be mean, but I'm going to be, I guess, then shame on you. Like,
yeah.
if you thought, like, then you're just a more idealistic person. Like, if you thought that Daniel Bryan...
I thought he might go over. Horror of horrors. I thought
he
might go
over.
I hoped so.
I did too, but I did too.
The heat was on Sheamus going into this. Yes. Sheamus got the better of him every week.
Yes, yes, I'm not disputing that, Ricky, but here's the thing. What you can't dispute, this match was not going to get 20 minutes.
No.
Okay.
Nor should it.
No. Nor should exactly. Nor should it have. Now,
12's not too much to ask for. You know, look at all the other chode matches that got at least 5 or 6 or 7.
Yeah, but, I mean, what do you do? Cut and give those matches none? I mean, you're right. I guess a lot of people said
2 minutes to the women's match, 3 minutes to Randy Orton, Kane,
yeah,
5 minutes to Big Show, Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, you could, but again, in the long...
Big Show, Cody was a squash anyway.
Yes, I know.
Why make it an extended squash?
I know a lot of people have said that, and I'm not disagreeing, but I'm saying...
That's the one that should have been 5 seconds.
Here's what I'm saying. We're splitting hairs, though, okay?
Okay.
Here's the thing. Do I agree with what they did? No. But at least they did something memorable. I actually think that what they did to Daniel Bryan here was better than if he lost in, say, a 5 or 10 minute match.
Potentially.
Because it would have been meaningless nonetheless. It would have been an opener. It wouldn't have been a great match where he could have showcased his skills.
They don't blow it. But they seem determined to ignore the fact that he is the martyr of the people. They're determined to ignore it. They're piping in booze.
They're
living in Bizarro World. They have not.
Maybe I'm
going to
become the idealistic person here. Okay, what I would say. I think that this might wind up being the best thing ever for Daniel Bryan that ever happened.
If they play it right, it will be.
Now, you're right. You're right. They could screw it up. It's kind of like, you know, when people tell me Tom Heckert is going to do the right thing next Thursday for the Cleveland Browns. It's like, what world are you living in, pal? Okay. All right. But the backlash against what they did, because the way it went down, is so vicious. You know, the next night on Raw, and by the way, I think you and I need to just take a quick moment to acknowledge how great that crowd was.
Yes. God bless you, crowd. Can you go to Raw every week? Because I know the one in D.C. sure sucked.
That was one of the classic Raw. I would love one time to go through the great individual Raws.
Okay.
That, to me, was almost like a top 10 Monday Night Raw ever.
That probably was.
Okay. It would that crowd, because they, you know, and again, maybe it's a vocal minority. Again, it's a smart mark heavy kind of crowd, because the people they were at WrestleMania, you know, a lot of people at WrestleMania, it's a national crowd, well traveling. But, you know, the way they crapped all over that Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio segment was so glorious. And the WWE, is stubborn and as frustrating as they can be at sometimes with the creative process, this yes thing, man, is taking on a life of its own. It's the new what, I think. It could be the new what. It could actually be the thing that gets rid of what. And Steve Austin didn't need to resort to what. Yes could actually, I mean, normally it's the kind of thing that would kind of annoy me a little bit, but it doesn't, because it could be the mechanism that gets Daniel Bryan, unless they just go, they're so hell-bent on that. But I just think, to me, they did make him a world champion.
Right.
I think that this could wind up being, in a couple years, at least I'm hoping, again, maybe I'm being realistic, this could be his Triple H at WrestleMania 12 moment, where you look back, okay, he got squashed real bad, it did him no favors whatsoever, but you know what, he persevered, and he's a star now.
I hope so.
I can only hope. That's the best. But the backlash, to me, had he lost in a 5 or 10 minute match, people would have been like, you know, like, because of the fact that he was squashed in the way, and they didn't get to see him, that energized his fan base in a way that a loss in a 5 or 10 minute pointless match wouldn't have done.
Right.
So I just think that, you know, moving forward, that this is not the disaster for him that it was made out to be right away.
I dearly, dearly hope not. It was funny because I know I was annoying some folks with my indie hipsterism here, grumbling about it at various points in the time.
He was not going to get the platform to show what kind of worker he was here regardless. People have to understand
That's probably true.
If I thought that... Now, if you would have done this, like, say, with Punk Jericho, that's different. That's stupid, and they wouldn't do that.
Right.
But this was not... I mean, people get hung up, this was a world title match. Look, there's two world championships now, which is stupid, and I'm going to say that as many times as I can. Work it in. It's not... This was not like a world title... The world title matches today, for even Punk Jericho, which is the more marquee world title match, Look, the two world title matches were not one of the top two matches on this show.
No, they weren't.
Okay, so, I mean, it speaks volumes. And, you know, people say right now the world championship, you know, it's not even involved. You know, Punk is kind of an afterthought on some of these Raws even. So, yeah, okay, yes, it was a 18-second world title match.
Right.
To me, you're just taking the world title match concept too literally when you say that. To me, I really hope now if... And here's the thing. I don't think it hurts him any worse than it would have had he lost in 5 or 10 minutes either. Like, I don't think, like, the Rubes were... You know, their big thing was that they were hoping... Maybe they are stupid. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I think they did kind of want them to chant. Wasn't there, like, some talk, like, chant 18 seconds at them? That will never happen.
Yeah, never.
That will... That if they really think that's going to happen... Then I got some, you know, I got some farmland in Jersey that I could sell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
If stuff harvested off the farmland at any rate.
Okay. If the WWE generally thinks that they are going to get this 18 seconds thing over like a you tapped out Kurt Angle thing,
never.
No, it will never. That will not happen.
People will not do
it
that.
It had the opposite effect.
Right.
And hopefully, like, you know, we talked about when we talked about the 97, 98 era where they did react in a positive and mature way when things maybe didn't go their way or the
right
way they had planned. They were able to take kind of these freak occurrences and turn them into, spin them into gold. Hopefully they can do that here.
Hopefully
it remains
they can
to be seen. I mean, I'm not, I
hopefully
am
they
not,
can.
I was not, when this happened, I was kind of irritated.
Right.
But I wasn't so irritated like some of these other people, like, this is the most disgraceful moment in professional wrestling.
Because
okay.
I was doing that during the show. Like, when the broads got, like, 6 minutes for their match, I was like, they give them 6 minutes, and
see,
they won't give Daniel Bryan. I know I was annoying a couple of folks with that.
In a literal sense, you're right. From a meritocracy perspective, you're right. But they brought in that celebrity who wasn't, I mean, who's a real B-level celebrity anyway, that
right.
Maria Menounos or whatever her name is.
The funny thing is, I read something in the sheets before that they were, like, shocked. Because they were for a company that drinks their own bathwater about their own talent, apparently it was either Vince or somebody else was like, holy crap, she's actually much hotter than any of our divas. They were like very surprised by that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But again, this match, this Daniel Bryan Sheamus match, was not going to be any kind of meaningful platform. It would have been great if he would have won and kind of continued the gimmick he was doing.
Yeah.
Okay, from that perspective, here's the thing. Here's where my opinion, I think, differs from a lot of people. If he's going to lose, then I don't really give a damn how he... I honestly would have rather him lost like this than in a meaningless 5-10
well,
match.
Well, something that...
I'm more... Like, the only thing that really angers me about it is that he lost.
Right.
But the way they did it, because it is somewhat memorable for not the reasons they want, it's people were upset about it. It's going to work out for him.
Right, and it's a springboard to potential mega face stardom if they take it. I just don't have faith in them.
Had he lost in a meaningless 7-minute match,
the
outrage I don't think would be as severe.
No, it's true. That's true.
So I don't know.
By the way, this match and this one started the show. We're only going to really focus on a couple other ones here. But I should mention that I did what I said I was going to do in the ninth part of our nine-part history of WrestleMania. Many episodes that I ordered this on my laptop when I was at my baseball draft. My league persisted in having the baseball draft that night for my fantasy league. So did that.
Who runs this? Just Bud Selig? Sounds like something out of his administration.
Fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Dave Adams, who it was a
actually,
letdown.
It sounds Gary Bettman-esque. Your boy.
It kind of does. I should tell you this here too. As if fantasy baseball humor isn't nerdy enough. My partner
sincerely doing a 9-part history of WrestleMania.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna like this one. So we were picking 11th in a 12-team serpentine draft.
Yes.
First round pick at 11 was Carlos Gonzalez. Second pick coming back around was Adrian Gonzalez. And I'm looking at the board coming up on the third, and I knew who was going to be there for us. Highest rated player on the board because I knew we had him rated higher than a lot of other folks did. Adrian Beltre. And I said to my partner Paul Pasek. Fellow, he's a member of the FDH Academy of Arts and Sciences. By the way, we have another Pantheon coming in a few weeks here. But I said to Paul, I said, holy crap, look at this. Our team is Adrian squared, Gonzalez squared.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Typical nerdy fantasy baseball humor.
Yes. There's something there.
The epitome of that, yes.